the OTB Podcast Network.
Welcome, Graham Hunter, to the show. Morning, Graham.
Morning.
The thing is, there is still a zombified version of the Super League roaming around between Spain and Italy this morning. What is the latest when it comes to the Spanish clubs?
Well, that's a very good question. Let me answer pictorially, shall I? I hope you can see this. Tell me if you can.
Yep.
Is that good enough? So people at home are able to see the front cover of Marca. And it says, Super Ridicule. It pictures the fans outside Stamford Bridge. And it goes on to say that the pressure of English fans, they talk about, rather than other clubs or the media or ex-players, smashes the sort of egotistical Super League. Now, that's Marca. They're not the power brokers. They're not Florentino. But of all the printed output on football in Spain, they're the ones who march to Florentino's beat. Normally, they won't put the boot into him for almost any reason, but they signal him, they point at him. When your closest PR ally turns against you, and when they print a double cover, this is also Marca, and they show that tonight and tomorrow we've got a full league program. And they call what's happening in La Liga the Super League for everybody. That is having a boot at an ex-ally when they're down and then coming back and stamping on the face again. You saw the communique in the early hours of this morning that came out from the Super League saying, well, justice and right is still on our side and we were doing this for you and we'll continue to find, you know, first of all, I want to pay tribute to everybody involved in the Super League for evoking, for any of us who grew up watching Three Stooges and Marx Brothers movies. And I also want to thank them for evoking all of us who ever played amateur football. When you turn up and the striker's drunk and the goalkeeper hasn't got his kit and somebody forgot to boot the referee. Because judging on this utter pig's breakfast, I'm unsure if I've ever in my working career seen anything as badly organised, as humiliating by so-called grown-ups than this. And you wonder, I think on a head, would they have remembered to put referees? Would they have turned up and said, oh, we forgot to tell Juventus or Milan where the pitch is this week? Somebody give them a phone. They're close enough. They'll be here in a minute. It's been completely laughable. I don't want to evoke the way in which these rat clubs split amongst each other. And I do think that Sheffer in the head of the UEFA has played a canny hand by taking briefings from Bayern and Paris Saint-Germain, ex-cohorts of the rebels, and having his card well and truly marked by two clubs who've gone up in power now, Paris Saint-Germain and Bayern Munich, and who still want more power, more money, more change. I do think that, you know, if you... I don't want to mimic that by splitting... I'm listening to Daniel there, and everybody's got their own view, and I just like to say, rather than, you know, very little disagreeing with you guys, what I was listening to, I like people who say sorry when they've made mistakes. It doesn't mean that I trust them. It doesn't mean that it's forgotten. It doesn't mean that there's not potentially mistakes or deliberate errors in the future again. It took them a long time to apologise, and it doesn't wipe the slate completely. But I think when you get, you know, part of the furore over the last few days has been accurate condemnation of the cowardice of these cheapskate half-wit owners who've misplayed that and miscalculated everything, haven't put themselves up for interview to back their project, and then the majority of them haven't said sorry. It doesn't write everything off, but I do appreciate it. Personally, just speaking from my own point of view, I like men and women of power who say, I did wrong, I apologise. It's a good habit to have. So in Spain, everybody is now waiting for the split between Laporta and Florentino Perez. In Spain, they are very, attentive to what goes on in Italy. Late last night, there was a very clear impression that the two clubs from Milan were on the point of leaving. Agnelli on his own, being reported that Agnelli was quitting. Agnelli denied that. He's done a smashing big interview with Corriere dello Sport and and Zatteroni, the journalist, this morning, protesting, complaining. It feels like Agnelli and Florentino are going to be the last two men standing, because Joan Laporta said yesterday, of course, we were only in this if our socios, our members, vote for it. Well, why didn't you ask them first and stay out, Joan? Catalan man speak with forked tongue. The picture here is still relatively unclear on, because Florentino was undoubtedly behind that statement that the embryonic and now fatally wounded ESL released about, you know, we'll still continue, we fight on. It looks pathetic, but the clock is ticking. What does Seferin do about now the only one of the four Champions League clubs which remains as a rebel, and Seferin needs to work out, does he let them play the semi-final? Does he take them out? There's going to be ferocious, ferocious negotiating and back-channel talking today and tomorrow. I think there's no question about that. So the momentum here this morning at 9:20 in Spain is not as ferocious as it was yesterday and last night. What a joyful day it was. And I'll tell you something, there are lessons here from the Treaty of Versailles. And it's interesting to watch Seferin and Infantino to some degree and work out, what do they do now? Do they go and dance on the grave of the ESL? Do they go and, how hard they try to punish these rebel owners? Do they stoke still more resentment and fury? To what degree are they, particularly Seferin at UEFA, are they beholden to the briefings that they got from Bayern and Paris Saint-Germain saying, if you press hard, they'll split, we know, because make no mistake about it, Paris Saint-Germain, but particularly Bayern, come out of this looking very clever, very politically shrewd, and given the help that they've offered to Seferin, their power has increased in the European top table.
The fact of the matter was that they had nobody on board for this. They managed to lose every single room possible. If they go back for another bite of this cherry, Graham, they need to include UEFA in some shape or form, do they not? Like, will their next attempt at trying to garner more revenue for their own back pocket involve the Champions League in some way?
I think that's already happened. Mm. You know, I don't claim to move and shake amongst the top table of UEFA. That's not true. But I did speak to four different UEFA employees yesterday. And I can honestly tell you, no, not yesterday, starting from late Sunday night, sorry. I can honestly tell you that they were blindsided, that there was a sense of, if not panic, it was like, what's happened? Why have they done this to us? Why didn't we see it coming? Where's our leader? And what immediately was happening in the background, I think Seferin, as far as I can interpret, has played his hand pretty well. Ferocity to begin with. But again, back channel on going out and saying, is there a hedge fund? Is there a massive fund that will allow me to match the Morgan money? And they've announced the revamp of the Champions League, which we've got to look at with a magnifying glass and may or may not please all of us. I certainly think that the old Champions League, or this Champions League that we're going to watch as of next week again, didn't need retouching in this style. I disagree with it, but it has been launched. But what wasn't launched was a new version of Champions League from 24-25 with an equivalent type of hedge fund backer behind it. Seferin has been talking to one. Does he try to kill further rebel attempts by massively augmenting the competition money, the loyalty money, the prize money, by mimicking what the ESL were proposing? I think there's a fair chance that he does. And at that stage, you begin to wonder how many of the things that the ESL clubs really genuinely wanted, which is more money, have they lost out on? And, you know, one of the things I said to the UEFA people that were on the phone to me, that they phoned me, not the other way around, was they may have grown weary of having to salute UEFA whenever they come into their grounds to say, okay, it's going to look like this, you've got to do this, these are our rules. And it can feel a high-handedness often about UEFA employees during competitions. And if the clubs chafe at that, then I think it's understandable. But who runs things? Long before this fell apart, I was asking, could you trust the clubs to actually run a league. They don't run any leagues at the moment. They want their piece of flesh whenever they're not happy. They want more money. They cart. Often across Europe, the clubs cart their leagues because nobody likes being in harness. And everybody thinks they're bigger and clever than they are. But they need somebody, and we're going to need people. They would have been going to team. They would have been going to UEFA if this ESL had found its feet. They'd have probably been hiring independently too. But there always needs to be organisers and people that make the things happen and governing bodies. And the fact that there was a bit of chafing and they wanted more money has led to this. You know, it was the consternation of stupidity and greed after a night out with too much drinks and look at the ugly child that was given birth too far too early. And thankfully that situation is en route to being put right. But nobody should believe that the issues have all gone away.
Hey, Graham, just to speak on Florentino Perez for a second. And famously, when he took over as Real Madrid president, there was this whole policy of Zidane's y Pavones. You know, the policy of mixing expensive signings with homegrown players like Francisco Pavón. And I'm sure you're undoubtedly one of the journalists who were writing about this at the time, but we all know what happened next, and the era of Galacticos and merchandising and worldwide stars happened. So I guess my question is this push towards profit and the notion that Florentino Perez will be president of a money-grabbing European Super League a surprise to you in any way, or is it entirely in line with the previous values he has shown?
If you're only talking about the concept, then it's no surprise to anybody because the facts, as you've mentioned, are spot on. But beyond that, nobody should ignore the way in which, you know, tired old white men want legacy when they've got everything else. And Florentino Perez was inspired. That Galactico idea was lifted directly from the man after whom Madrid's stadium is made, named Santiago Bernabeu. It was their idea when they were a relatively weak club post-Civil War, post-World War, an Athletic Club and Atleti were the two easily dominant clubs. And Madrid rebuilt themselves, building up to the early 50s by saying, where are the best players in the world? And then marketing it then to the fans, talking about it in the media all the time and helping with L'Equipe to form the original European Cup. And they had dotted throughout their ranks the best players from all around that they'd gone and sought, and Florentino tried to replicate that with Zidane and Pavones. And across the piece since he took power in 2000, nipped off for a little break in whatever 2007-8, until now, it's a moot point. You can spend the rest of the show and the rest of this season's shows arguing about has he been good or bad for Real Madrid. The Madrid fans in general will say that I meet either through profession or friendship will say, we know what he's like. We know exactly what he is. But look what he's done for us. And it's fine because the trophies, the glory, you know, three straight Champions Leagues and a partial tipping over of some of the best years Barcelona ever had. So to come back to the point, he wants to overtake, not emulate, Santiago Bernabeu's legacy as being known as one of the key founders of the European Cup. And Florentino, besides the power and listen to the way he attacked Seferin on television here on Sunday night, which was an absolutely, absolutely pathetic own goal that helped start the English clubs away. It's nonsense about, well, I think kids aren't watching enough football anymore, and if they haven't got the attention span, maybe we need games that are shorter than 90 minutes. You have to. Anyway, your charting of the future that Florentino Perez might still be trying for includes the fact that he wants legacy. He wants to be known as the man who ripped up the format of European football, and he wants to have his name on it, his fingerprints and DNA on it. And that instinct won't go away. In my opinion, I very much hope that part of what he's aiming to do won't happen and that this is a fatal wound. But as of this morning, it's like the Monty Python scene in it, the Holy Grail, where there's a sword fight in the forest and a limb keeps getting chopped off and he's like, flesh wound! That's kind of the mode that old Monty Florentino is in this one.
I know Daniel Harris is still with us this morning on OTB AM. Daniel, like that interview that Graham's talking about on I think it was on El Chiringuito TV, this bizarre and frankly unchallenged interview that Florentino Perez made. One of the lines that came out of it was this notion that you know, young people weren't interested in football and that the games were too long, and we had this idea planted in our heads that football matches in the European Super League potentially, or under Perez's vision anyway, would be shorter than the average 90-minute football matches. What did you make generally of Perez's interview and some of the comments he came out with?
So that particular one, actually, I almost felt like he had the germ of a good point there. He didn't know that he had one. But I think that the thing with football matches, when I watch football matches as a supporter, when I watch football matches as a writer, one of the things that winds me up is that the way that time is kept is ridiculous. And if he was about to say, what we're going to do is we're going to have 30 minutes of ball in play time each way, I'd get behind that, where the clock is visible so everyone can see when it's stopped and how much time is getting added on at the end. That, to me, would be a good development for football. And ball in play time would mean that you never left a football match feeling that you've been cheated. I remember like the time that I always think about is, and it's personal, I'm a United supporter, so I think about United, is in 2004-05, United were in a group with Villarreal, Benfica and Lille. And they got knocked out of that group. And the reason they got knocked out of that group is because they were rubbish. So this isn't an excuse for why something that happened 16 years ago happened 16 years ago. They were rubbish. But I remember watching those games, coming away from them, going to the games, feeling like I'd not actually seen a game of football. So little ball in play time was there, and so little did the officials do anything about it. So if we were about to standardise how much ball in play time there is and actually increase the amount of football that we get to see and make it part of the game, I'll be behind that. But that's obviously not what Florentino Perez was saying. He was, and the thing that him saying that revealed to me was that actually, if these guys are running their own league, they can change any of the laws of the game that they like, that they decide don't fit, and there is no one to safeguard that. And given that this league is basically them taking football away from people in order to make money, and given the thing that these guys do in their day jobs, like Roman Abramovich and Sheikh Mansour, given the way that they behave in their day jobs and the things that they're not ashamed of doing in their day jobs, then why would they not start messing with the rules of football, the laws of football, if they thought that that would make them more money? And there was no one to safeguard the game. There was no one to stop them from doing that, because they would be the people who participated in the league, who were running the league. And then I started thinking they're going to have a compliance unit. What happens if it suits Florentino Perez and Joel Glazer for the result of a match to be in a particular way? And this is why you need people overseeing what happens. This is why the clubs can't run their own leagues, because it's a conflict of interest. And much as UEFA are rubbish and FIFA are rubbish and corrupt, and they've been riddled with corruption and riddled with bad decision-making and riddled with poor leadership, You need people to safeguard the game, and you need people to safeguard the game on a governmental level so that we don't have these people owning our football clubs. But you also need people to safeguard the game on a purely operational level so that the laws are the laws, and so that it's fair and everyone is playing fairly.
Lads, let me in, Daniel. I hope you were speaking in inverted commas there, because you can pick off items where you say FIFA and UEFA are rubbish. But unless you've got a completely different point of view than me, and I'm speaking partially as somebody who loves football, partially as somebody who works as a reporter of football, the Champions League is a glorious beast. It's utterly stupendous.
But that's because football is stupendous.
It's better than... No, the structure of the competition is fantastic. It's better than the European Cup. The European Cup is glorified, but the format was stale, that led to football that was unattractive. The Champions League has utterly changed. Not mind revenue and marketing, like this, given us football that we'd never seen before.
I wouldn't stories. Although what I would say is that I think we definitely, there are some moral issues with the Champions League. Even when they started letting in clubs that weren't champions, that elevated the standard. But I'm not stupid enough to just say, well, that was a bad thing because it's the champions, they're not champions. Because when you have the European Cup, all you know that you've got is you've got the best side in all the countries from the previous season. What you don't necessarily have is the best sides at that time, because those things change. Once you start letting in 3 and 4 teams from countries, you're going to have all the best teams, because it's very rare that a team comes from 6th in the Premier League to be the best team in Europe the next season. So the standard definitely elevated. What I thought, personally, I thought the best format of the Champions League, because they played around with it quite a bit, Like, there was a time where it was just a group stage when Rangers almost got to the final when they got picked by Marseille.
That was year one. That was
the kind of the first format. So I felt like the best format, and this could sound like a ridiculous bias, was 98-99, where United played 17 games to win the Champions League, which is a lot. Maybe it was 17 games when it became two groups the next season. But that, see, there was serious jeopardy in the group stages at that point. Then they did it with two group stages. Then they went to two group stages in 2000, and that was way too much. Now, where it is at the moment is there's probably, I don't think, enough jeopardy in the group stages still. I think they do need to do something to refresh that part of the Champions League before Christmas. The bit after Christmas is obviously up. As you say, stupendous, because you've got unbelievable football teams who are unbelievably well funded by this cartel that they've created as a consequence of opening the Champions League up to all these clubs.
No, stop. This is my point. Initially, you said UEFA are rubbish. Now we're talking about tinkering and
it's
very good. And when people talk about not enough jeopardy, the team that won three times in a row recently and is in the semi-finals now was clinging on by their fingernails in the group stage this year, Real Madrid. Everybody talks about mega clubs, but Ajax got to the semi-final and should have gone through to the final the other year, having not been in one since 96. Roma got to the semi-final against Liverpool, and Liverpool by the end were knackered and clinging on to their fingertips, and Roma hadn't been to a final since 84. Last season was an odd season, and I'm not defending you, but I'm defending my love of the tournament and the way people, the accuracy of the vocabulary people use about it. Leipzig and Lyon, in an odd season, in an odd format, got to the semi-finals last season.
Yeah, it's a cup
It might be imperfect, but I think those of us who were horrified by what we've just seen from the ESL need to choose our language really much more carefully. I don't just mean you. I mean in general. I hear some horse being talked about Champions League because people would like to modify it, calibrate it, but use sweeping statements about it being rubbish or UEFA being idiots or other. That's not true.
I didn't say that, but you said
UEFA and FIFA may be idiots and rubbish at the beginning of your diatribe. All I'd say is I knew that what you wanted was more about calibration rather than sweeping the whole thing out of the window. But all of us who broadcast, we need to be more careful because we fuel the idiots. You've seen it in Trumpism. You've seen it with Boris Johnson. We need to be much more accurate and cautious and careful about the words, the phrases that we use. Because these people who have just tried to ruin football, take them and reuse them. And my only point is the Champions League may need recalibration, but it is a thing of utter shimmering beauty, and it's given people like you and me and the lads on the station the best work of our lives.
But that's because football is a thing of shimmering beauty. It doesn't.
No, that's not enough. Football was involved in the ESL. There's no shimmering beauty there.
That was pushing aside the football in order to pursue the money. And I think when we're talking about the Champions League, we need to be honest and realistic about the way that the Champions League money distorts competition in local leagues. So for example, you have repeat winners and repeat winners of the English League, the Premier League, is the only league really that still generally retains a great deal of unpredictability of who's going to win it. Because what happens is you have the clubs that repeat qualify for the Champions League are then able to take their wealth into their domestic league, and it is distorting. There's not enough redistribution of Champions League money. It is distorting, and of course, when you get Bayern Munich against Paris Saint-Germain, where you have Bayern Munich and Paris Saint-Germain who constantly win their domestic league and have much more money than everybody else, you're going to have a phenomenally high level of football because they can spend obscene amounts of money on players.
Recalibrate your language. Look at Lille Paris Saint-Germain today. Look at Lille Paris Saint-Germain at the top of their league. In Spain, recently, the teams that win the league, you point to me. In Spain right now, there's a 6-point spread between fourth and first. And Sevilla are genuine candidates to win the title. Atleti are leading the title. They haven't won it since 2014.
It's unusual.
It still happens. So all I'm asking you is not to say the Premier League is the only one where there's a title race.
I didn't say it's the only one where there's a title race. I'd say it's the least predictable of the major leagues.
It's not what you said, and that's what I'm asking.
What did I say?
You said that the Premier League is the only one with a competitive title race. That's what you said.
Those weren't the words I used. There is a title race. There is a title race in Spain this season. But in general, the league has won. Atletico won one league. In the last 10 years, how many leagues have not been won by Madrid or Barcelona?
Is there or isn't there also a title race in France?
This season,
the point gap between Lille and Paris Saint-Germain. Then be more careful with your language.
But I didn't say that there was no title race. You're hearing my words as what you would like them to have been rather than what they were. In general, Ligue 1 is not a competitive league because Paris Saint-Germain pissed the league almost every season. The one season that didn't happen, Unai Emery got fired. And the year that Monaco won the league. But of the last 10, how many haven't been won? Since Qatar's money came to Paris, how many leagues haven't they won? One.
Monaco in 16.
Yeah, the one that Monaco won. One.
And maybe this one.
And maybe this one, which they may still win themselves anyway.
Be more judicious in your language then.
Why? That it's not generally a competitive
league. Because there's a title race in Italy.
I didn't say there wasn't
and
one.
And Spain right now. You said England was the only competitive title race.
How many in a row? Is it 7 or 8?
Daniel,
you said that only England had a competitive title race.
No, I didn't.
And you need to be
Daniel,
more judicious with your language.
We may not get wound up in language here because we're going to end up going around in circles. One person is convinced somebody said something the other person didn't. You'll be able to go back and watch it back as well. The fact of the matter here is that there is going to be a lot of these conversations that happen over the next little while, whether or not the Champions League is the perfect format and whether or not that change will happen over the next couple of years to inflate the entire thing is something that's going to be of, as we can hear, of huge contention over the next little while. I know it's been a lot of your time this morning and I really appreciate it, Graham and Daniel. And I know you both want the same thing for football at the very end of the day. Daniel Harris, Graham Hunter, thanks for
you guys.
That's a virtual hug.
Yeah, there is.
Thanks very much to the lads. It is 8:40 a.m.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.